Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I've got two filmmakers with me today. I've got Omri Rose and Jan Fischer, and I'm really proud to have them here. Their film, actually, you guys have a couple of special status with me because your film, Achan and Ezra.
Great pronunciation.
Well, Hebrew school. But it was one of the first films because of COVID. It first was at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2020. And then you submitted it to Film Invasion Los Angeles. And it used to be that if someone submitted to one of the other festivals after the first one, we'd give you a refund and say, you know, just wait. But because of COVID and virtual, I was like rubbing my hands over this, saying, oh boy, Achan and Ezra is going to be at the theater because we'll be back in the theater in June of 2021. And then we didn't quite get into the theater, so... But I think Achan and Ezra is like the first film that was in both festivals. So like wow. I don't even have to explain to you two that I programmed two festivals. So thank you so much for the film. And very proud to say that it's going to be in the Discovery Indie Film TV series in season 5. Which I'm aiming, I believe we're aiming for a March 15th release, which is like 3.5 weeks from now. But it's looking good. I think the whole season has come together with a lot of great... Actually, I'm really glad to have your film in it because
thank you.
I love having comedy in there. But, so first I'm supposed to mention the TV series and ask people, hey, look, be nice. Go to Amazon Prime Video, search for Discover Indie Film. Don't watch movies on your phone, so use Prime Video on that nice, big, chunky TV and with a Prime app in it somehow. And enjoy Discover Indie Film. It's a series that is... an anthology of short films that have been in the two festivals that I program, and I guarantee it's a lot of fun. And if you wait till after March 15th or so, you'll also see Jan and Omri's comedy. So, with that said, I think, did I mention anything else? Okay, so now, I'm just going to throw it to you two gentlemen. We were chatting so much before we started recording.
Yeah.
But I think I warned you, I'm just going to ask you, you can decide who goes first. But I'm really interested in what got you into the film industry. Omri is a writer and actor. Jan directed the film, and both extremely talented, and it's an extremely good film.
Thank you.
So, why don't you go first? Who wants to say their upbringing?
Well, I'll jump on the last thing you said about watching it on a big, nice TV and add, go to your TV settings and get rid of the pre-function video settings that give all sorts of, like, blur motion and stuff, which drive filmmakers crazy.
Motion smoothing
and
stuff.
It's the worst. Or the preset color correction stuff. It's like... horrible. It's one of the first things I do when I go to like a friend's house and they turn on the TV and I'm like, ah, save me.
I'm proud to say I actually just joined the world of 4K. I was very slow to buy a new TV. Got a new TV, probably because the sales were good for the Super Bowl. And that was the first thing I did. I turned off that motion smoothing. And
why do they have it? Doesn't make sense to me.
I know.
Just to annoy filmmakers.
No, I tell you why they have it.
Tell us.
As a filmmaker, you go, you look for a great DP. You spend all this money on lights. You're like, I got the DP who was nominated for Golden Globe or whatever. And then you go shoot your movie. It looks amazing. And then you do a screening in your friend's house. It looks horrible. And they're like, who was your DP? It's so bad.
So again, to annoy filmmakers.
It is bizarre. It is bizarre. Actually, I didn't catch it till there was some jitter. There was jitter on a pan. And I was like, oh, that setting.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I had to tell the wife and kid, I'm like, trust me, Liz, just let me hit pause and let me fix this goddamn TV because Sony doesn't know what they're doing. I don't know why everyone does it.
It's really strange to me. You know, speaking of also theaters and things, screening the movie, we were lucky enough to also have our film recently in a festival in Israel in person. Jan unfortunately couldn't attend, but it was the first time that I saw the film in a cinema. You know, we had done smaller screenings and things, but just to be in a room watching the film with a group of people, especially with a comedy, you know, and that's also quite special because the film's in Hebrew, so we had an audience that understood everything without reading the subtitles. It was just a really special moment and a treat to, you know, hear the laughter and that they're riding along with the journey of the film, so that was fun.
Absolutely, yeah. And the fact that it was shot there, and I'm sure that was an amazing experience to take it home. So to speak, even though you both are based in LA and And I admit, I'm one of those, well, first I want to know your history, but I am one of those people, the first time I watched it, I'm like, yeah, they must have gone off in the desert here in California and found a nice, but no, it's shot in Israel.
Well, actually, this place is very special where we shot it. If we did it in here in the U.S., to get a place like that, we probably would be able to get it because it's a national park, but also they probably would have charged us a crazy amount of money. But we got lucky. This place is one of a kind in the world. It's under protection, and it really doesn't exist anywhere else. It used to be the sea, so you could still see pieces of, like, sea things, you know, in there. And now it's basically a desert, but it has a lot of significance in, you know, as a historical thing. And you can, you know, have animals there. So we were not allowed to do anything. They're like, this is the road. Stay here. Don't move. Although they didn't put a bunch of people check on us like it would have been in the U.S. So that was good. We even managed to readjust some, since we, you know, based in L.A., so we are filmmakers from here. We can do whatever we want. So we showed, we're like, okay, this thing is sticking, we should move it.
Yeah, we tore down the sign and then reassembled it.
So we did do some changes, although we were told not to go left, not to go right, which we tried not to, but yes, we did adjust some things.
But you left everything as you found it.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Cleaner, restored it. Cleaner than how we found it. Yes.
For sure.
This is the way we
approached it. All right, but we're talking about your amazing film, but first, tell me your history. What got you into acting and writing?
Well, okay.
This is Omri speaking.
Yeah, so hi, I'm Omri.
I can figure out me speaking, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's Jan.
So for me, my mom tells a story that when I was 5, I went up to her and I was like, Mom, I want to be an actor. And she's like, now, Omri, do you want to be an actor or do you want to be a star? And I said, TikTok, baby. No, I'm just kidding. don't even have a TikTok. No, it was always for me about acting. So I said, no, Mom, I want to be an actor, not a star. She's like, okay, great. Then we'll, you know, support this endeavor and you're in it for the right reasons, kind of. And yeah, so I grew up everywhere. Nigeria, Switzerland, Israel, Kenya, Holland. My dad was a diplomat, so we were constantly stationed to different places. And for me, acting was like an escape, I guess, you know, a lot easier to go into a character and find yourself there. And writing came along with that, creativity, the output of it. And I also used to play like role-playing games, Dungeons and Dragons and stuff, which is really good for, you know, opening your imagination to worlds and creating them and writing and putting in characters. And it just kind of everything rolled from there. That's the short version anyway.
Very short version, but I'll say... That makes perfect sense. And I think a lot of kids who move around a lot get into acting and get into performance. And Dungeons and Dragons, I'm so glad you mentioned it. Because I think there's an undercurrent of Dungeons and Dragons in the industry, like in entertainment, because it is role-playing and it is very creative.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe there's some really famous people who are coming out of the shadows and admitting that they even play D&D as adults.
The biggest one is a name that you would kind of not have said. Vin Diesel, of course, is one of those guys who's like, yeah, he's a big D&D guy. So it's kind of fun.
And I'm forgetting.
Yeah, Joe Manganiello. Manganiello.
Yeah. Very cool. So. Very cool. And by the way, I'll add, I love your mother's response. I love that she said, do you want to be an actor or do you want to be famous, a star? Because that's a very intelligent way to look at it. Because most kids just want to be famous. They just, I just want to be that person on TV. I don't care about the work. So she actually, that was a really perceptive way to respond.
My mom's a very clever woman, very intelligent and a very special lady, very talented. Bit of an artist herself, so.
Excellent. And I think everyone out there knows you should always trust a man who loves his mom, respects his mom.
Yeah.
Well, cool. And acting all around, and did you end up here? What brought you here?
Oh, okay. So the longer version.
Yeah, well, I want to know.
Why not? Yeah, so.
I assume you guys met in L.A. or?
We met in London. Actually. So.
Dear Lord. Well, you got to get us at least to London.
Yeah. Well, my first professional stuff in the acting world was when I was like 15. I was in Holland at the time. I was doing a lot of theater, as most people start in the acting world. And I ended up doing a tour when I was 15 across Europe. Got to miss school, which was fun. So that was an amazing experience. And that was the first, as I said, professional kind of thing. And then I went to Israel, did military service, and then afterwards went to London. And in London is where I kind of began my real professional career. more in film and TV, and voiceover came into it. I do a lot of voiceover work as well. And through a mutual friend in London, we met. There's a funny story there.
Very interesting friend.
He's a very interesting friend, but he's like, oh, I have to introduce you to my really good friend, Jan. He's great. He's great. And then he connects us on WhatsApp to this thing, and he creates this group. And he's like, this is my friend, Jan. And I don't even remember what last name he writes. And then Jan's like, that's not my last name. He's like, oh, it's not? I've known you for so long. You don't even know my last name. He's like, oh, I made a mistake. It was just a really random connection.
Yeah, true. That's what happened.
That's hilarious. And by the way, one of the compliments I was going to pay you is, first time I saw the film, I thought your British accent was so great.
Oh, thank you.
And now I know you lived in London for a while.
Well, my dad's British as well. So,
oh.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. Yeah, I love your, I believed you were a British guy.
Oh, actually, thank you. Well, I am British.
Even though you're an
actor.
I have
a passport.
Yeah.
But you did model the accent from not British.
And funnily enough, I modeled it not on a British person. This is a funny... Well, basically, Chris Hemsworth in the first Thor does this kind of like very big, kind of broad, British-y kind of accent. It's a little different than what he does in other movies. Kind of like, yes, we're going over here. Yes, all right. I like this. Give me another. And, you know, throwing down the glass. And it's kind of like this bombastic kind of thing. And so I kind of went in that direction with the accent. And he's, of course, Australian, so.
He is. Know. But it works.
It works. Yeah.
Excellent. All right, so London. So we should we do Jan's history and get you to London?
Get to London.
Wow, that will be...
He also has a crazy
history.
They have
to say that
zero,
a short...
Go from birth to London in seven
that's
minutes
will
or
be
less.
A bit longer, but I'll try. So I am originally... I'm born in Ural Mountains. Now, nobody knows where it is, of course.
I do from the game Risk, but go on.
Yeah, but it's very close to Siberia. It's very cold, and the mountains are the oldest mountains on Earth. And what's unique about the city I'm from is that until 1989, it didn't exist on the maps. Well, the city actually did exist, but the next city to it didn't exist. The reason is because that's where all the nuclear weapon was essentially positioned, and they had all kinds of... It basically was closed city. Foreigners weren't allowed, and nobody knew it existed. So that's why I said it's a long way to London. So
no, that, by the way, fascinating that it was a city that the USSR kept hidden from maps.
Correct. Also,
it
it's
so strategically important.
Exactly. And for the reasons, it's also was super industrial and, actually very important for the Russian economy at the moment, at that moment. Also it's the most polluted spot on Earth. Still is, because they had a nuclear explosion there in the 60s, which was like three times bigger than Chernobyl, apparently. Again, who knows? It's just the internet. So that's where I was born. No, I don't have horns or a tail, but, you know, it's possible.
Quite healthy for someone who, yeah. Yeah, the USSR had no EPA.
Exactly. So I, and, you know, my family ended up there by a fluke because they're actually European, but that's a whole other story. The point is, I was born there. I liked movies since I was a child. I wanted to be an actor. You don't even know that.
No,
around I was 6 years old. I mean, even at that time in Russia, you know, to get to be an actor, you really only could become an actor if you were living in Moscow. Maybe St. Petersburg, maybe some other cities that had the studios, because that's where they picked the young people. Living where I was, it's almost no, there's no way. It's like, and that's before internet and all of that stuff. So there's almost no way you can just dream about it. But at that time, you know, so when I was 6 years old, I went, we had a film festival. Speaking about film festivals, they did do film festivals. They invited people from Moscow, actors. It was a children film festival. And there was a few really famous Russian actors, especially in the children community. So I was seven. I went to the festival because there was this movie theaters for kids, which were very cheap, and you can go and like watch movies. And I went to one of the super famous Russian stars, because I was at that time I didn't care, and I said, hi, I want to be in the movies. She looked at me like, okay. So 2 hours later, I'm in a restaurant with her and the whole gang of all these famous actors, and she calls my mom and says, hi, I'm blah, blah, blah. My mom almost had a heart attack. She's like, it's the same thing if, you know, your seven-year-old child went and suddenly, I don't know, you got a call from Chris Hemsworth or Tom Cruise going, hi, I'm here, you know, I'm here in the restaurant hanging out with you or whatever. So they were like, they liked me and they put me in the database for, not that I ever got the role, but that's how it started. But at that time I was already fascinated by movies, although I didn't see anything aside from Russian movies, but there are some really good Russian movies that you know, that, of course,
yeah, I was actually going to ask it if it was all Russian
at that
Soviet
time,
cinema.
No, there was some foreign films that were available in the theaters that Russia allowed. We're talking about, you know, 84, 85, approximately. There was, you know, one of the movies, actually, that a few movies that I saw very young, which were allowed into Russia, were, I mean, I'll have to answer this question, I guess, at some point later, but it was Once Upon a Time in America, which I had to sneak into the theater because it was not, you know, at the age of 10, you weren't really, or whatever it was, I don't remember exactly, you weren't allowed to see this movie. And they were showing the full version of it, which is kind of interesting. So I remember that movie. There was an Oliver Stone film, which I don't remember which one. So I watched some movies which I was not really supposed to watch. But that was in the theaters. But what I really got into the idea of actually making films myself is when, you know, the VCRs showed up in Russia. And I was telling you that story before. So VCRs, when, you know, perestroika started, as you call it here, when VCRs showed up, it cost more than a car. You can buy probably a car and a half in exchange. So that's how much you had to pay for a VCR. So it was really a luxury. My father had access to one through his work. So he used to bring it on the weekends. So I started watching movies and I watched Star Wars. Now, at that time in Russia, there was no legal system for those movies. They were all pirated. So the translation was basically done by three people, one woman, two men, always. But because they didn't want to be identified, they used to wear laundry clips. I don't know what they call the ones that you use the laundry, you know, the
yeah, clothes.
Yes. Yeah, those ones they used to put on their nose and they sounded like this. And the whole movie you would listen to voice like that. And so you get used to it. So that's how I watched pretty much most of the films that people here already were familiar with. But for me, you know, Star Wars looked like it was from another planet. And that's, I just remember because it was like, oh my God, fascinating. You know, I also watched, funny enough, Mel Brooks, which is connects to Achan and Ezra. Because that's, but I remember I was like, again, probably 10 or 11, I saw the world history, not world, what's
history, history, of the history world. Of the world.
And I was really disappointed there was no part two.
It's coming.
I remember I was like, where is part two? Well,
it's
coming 30
now.
Years
because
later.
Part two was Jews in Space.
Yes, yeah. I know, but I actually thought that I was trying to find the second, you know, because those tapes were also very hard to get a hold of. So people were moving them from place to place, so the quality was not great either. But I'm not even going there because that's the only way to get movies that were on actual screen theaters, which was really rare for an American film actually shown, even in 87, 88, still. So that was kind of my influence. And at that time, I started thinking, okay, maybe acting is interesting, but maybe I can make movies. And then, you know, one thing led to the other. We left Russia, you know, ended up in Israel. I lived in Europe for a bit and then came here, studied, did all kinds of things on the way. Then went to London and, well, actually, no. And then if you know, a longer story, then here in LA, I met, these crazy people that introduced me to other crazy people. And those crazy people introduced me to a guy named John something. And he, this John something, then ended up going to London to teach. And he is the one who introduced me to Omri. And that's how I met Omri.
Jan, of course, in this time is also producing movies. His background
is
a producer, so.
Yes, true.
This is his directorial debut.
So it's funny because I wanted to make a movie for a while as a director, and I was thinking about it because that was my original plan. I wanted to direct, but then I got into, you know, because directing a movie, I mean, of course, there's different options, but especially when I started, you know, you didn't really have a phone that you could use to shoot a film. That was, I remember I was at the NAB in Las Vegas when they introduced Canon XL1. So that's when this whole thing, oh my God, this camera can actually maybe shoot a film. So I've seen it with my own eyes. First time they ever showed you the camera, it was at this Las Vegas convention. I was still going to school in Orlando, film school. So I always want to direct, but unfortunately I realized that you need money to make a movie, and I didn't have an ability or a family or anything. So I said, okay, maybe I can learn how to make movies, organize it, and then get into directing. And then it went, you know, one thing led to the other, you know how it is. Then this guy here, Omri, he was like, okay, you want to direct? You should direct. And I'm like, okay, but when? He's like, okay, I have this script. I'm like, yeah, but let's do it next year. He's like, no, I'm going to Israel here. We're making it. That's literally how it happened. I mean, I owe him that because I would have been procrastinating this, making this movie for now 10 years, believe me. And so he's like, no, we're going. And so I was like, shit, sorry. And I was like, I have to go.
You can curse all you want.
So I was like, okay, I have to go. That's it. So I was like, this Omri, and now he's making me go direct this movie. I don't want to do it.
So you had this a producing career,
film producing career,
and you knew him as a producer.
Right.
But as soon as he told you he had always wanted to direct, you just called his bluff then and there.
Well, we'd been working together for a while. I'd been helping develop projects with him, and we had, you know, a couple of things going on. And then, of course, when Jan shared that he wanted to direct, it actually started before then that I had written something that we were trying to develop, and that didn't work out in the end. And then I kind of was like, you know, Jan, I have this old script that I wrote a while ago that, you know, I'm going to Israel. Maybe it's a funny script. I like it. It's kind of silly.
And I like comedies. And for me, I love doing comedies. I think I'm funny, even though nobody else thinks
so. So
I would disagree with those people.
Yeah, I sent it to him, and he liked it, you know, riffed on it. And then we were talking, so when are we going to film? And back and forth, and this and that. Should we shoot in L.A.? Should we shoot it in Israel? What's it going to cost? And then I was going to Israel, and he was like, oh, you need to meet my DP friend in Israel. And he's this incredible DP. And I was like, oh, cool. Wait, would he shoot our short film? And he's like, well, maybe I'll talk to him. Yeah, but probably he'd shoot it if we do it in Israel. And I was like, okay, then let's shoot it in Israel. Okay, but when? Now. Let's do it. I'm going. Let's do it. And then it kind of rolled from there. So
yeah, we went to Israel mostly because of Giora, who is very well known. He did Lebanon, which I'm sure you heard about. He did Tehran on Apple. He did, you know, this movie called Foxtrot, which was, I mean, he won, you know, European Academy Award. He won Venice. He's one of the best DPs. And he is a really good friend. And I told him, if you shoot my movie, I'll come to Israel. And he said, fine, I'll help you. So that's how the movie happened. So, you know, it was kind of very quick. And of course, with my luck, it had to be done. And then COVID started and I couldn't go. My whole thing was, we're going to go to festivals. We're going to screen the movie in the theaters. It didn't happen. I mean, aside from the one screening that happened in Israel, which I wasn't at. So,
that's
what happens.
Let me ask. So the DP, you were friend, you actually had a lot of connections from your years of producing.
Yeah, but we never actually worked together. We just, actually, it's not true. We did work together. I did a small movie.
Yeah.
Did a small film in Romania, which he DP'd. I didn't direct. I was more of a consulting producer, really. But, you know, the director really wanted him. And, you know, we were friends before. So I said, do you want to come and hang out with me in Romania? And he likes to, you know, likes good wine, so he always wants to go to Europe. So he's technically European too. So we were friends, really, not really work together aside from this little film. But I think he's one of the most incredible DPs, honestly, because he can shoot anything in any way, and that's really what kind of pushed us to go to Israel.
And he saved our movie because we had a flood between our 2 days
of
shooting.
That's true.
And we had to move locations completely, and you can't tell because he figured out a way to shoot it.
Well, the original idea of mine was to shoot the whole movie in one shot.
One take.
Because if you look at the film, it could be done. And I, you know, that was my initial idea. But Giora was like, well, I don't know, maybe we can split into two parts because there's different sides, but let's try it. So that was something I really wanted. So at least in two takes, meaning in two pieces, but not like, but unfortunately, and again, because of his experience, so when we were shooting the first day, we were at this really unique place. It was really good weather. He was like, you know what? Of course, you know, I'm so produced, so I could apply that head, but we had a really small crew. So, you know, Omri was doing you know, partial production design, trying to organize this car.
Running around with chainmail,
so,
doing all this production.
So
you can just pull it off when you...
He was really... I mean, we were, you know, we're doing a lot of things because it was a small crew. And we had the best DP, the best film, you know, the camera department you can get in Israel, in my opinion, or anybody's opinion. The first they see everybody, of course, Georg's friends. So they sort of... So at some point midday, he was like, you know what? Let's turn around the camera. Let's shoot this direction. I was like, yeah, but I want to do. He's like, yeah, but look at the sun. Trust me, shoot this side because you never know. And thank God I listened, because the second day we didn't go there because it was raining and we knew it, but what we didn't realize is that it's a desert.
Flooded completely.
So the day three,
heavy rain.
Come there, and literally as soon as you get to the area, there's a huge lake in front of us. And we had an SUV, actually a few of them, but it's still a lake. And the management, they were like, look, guys, you go in. We can, let's say we let you in. There was a whole story with some kids there that they didn't want to, you know, but they're like, okay, go check it out. So I drove, I took the SUV and we went into the place we were shooting, but it was all wet and muddy because it's all sand. So even if they let us in, there's no way we could recreate. It was muddy. So I was like, okay, what do we do? So we don't have the money. It's a small project. It's a tiny short film. I already have people here. So what do we do? So Giora was like, okay, forget about your, you know, your continuous shot. Not going to happen, but we can do something. Now, first we were looking for a similar area. So for a few hours, we drove around trying to find similar road. And I was thinking in the car myself, okay, this is great that he made me shoot the other direction because there's no way.
I mean, we would have had to go
an extra day for sure. So then we were like, okay, we cannot find a similar place. Everything is wet. So we went back to where we started.
Same background.
Yes, and we found the top of the hill, which had the same back, and we just...
Didn't shoot the floor.
Yeah.
Just moved up.
We just didn't shoot the floor.
Yeah, basically. We also had to use less wide lenses or narrow lenses, and unfortunately... In the movie, most of the people don't pay attention.
No one knows.
Yeah. I know that, and I really was like, okay, I wish I didn't have to do it, but it works. Of course, because of that, there were some mistakes with the movements because we didn't really have a continuity person. So, you know, it took us forever to edit it.
In the editing room, we had to come up with some creative.
So it doesn't look like he suddenly has the sword here and then sword there. But this piece was difficult because we essentially cheated. But because of Giora and because of his ability to see things, and I kind of started thinking, okay, and he told me in the beginning when we were discussing the movie, he's like, be prepared that this could happen. So I kind of knew what could, not that he knew about the flood, but he was always saying, look, you never know. So we made it happen. Omri was all stressed out, running around going, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, you know. And I was like, I've produced enough movies to be calm about those things. So I was like, okay, worst case scenario, you know, I'll have to, I don't know, go and work in a restaurant, get more money so we can pay for the movie.
At the end, when we actually went to the editing room, you know, we only had about 30 takes the entire movie. You know, 30 setups where we said action and go. And then, you know, we have takes that are like 15 minute long. Sometimes we didn't stop and we just did a little piece over again, but just because it was really long, continuous stuff. So.
Also, it's a comedy, so I wanted the actors to play...
off each other.
To actually and improvise a little bit, because I had an idea of making it a little bit cartoonish, so I actually liked them being a little bit over the top, because just for me, that's what I wanted, you know, it's being like almost like in the theater, almost.
I think we talked about that in one of our festival Q&As, how it really... We haven't talked about your casting yet, because obviously your actors for Achan and Ezra are amazing.
Thank you.
But it has a real vaudevillian feel. And it does feel like, you know, like one of the late 50s, early 60s, like a Cosby and Hope sort of comedy team. So the fact that you let them play it out as if it was a stage performance makes sense to me, because it plays that way. They're so funny together.
But that was the idea. That's why I put, if you notice in the movie, there's music that assigned to each character. In certain places, when he walks, you have a music playing. I almost wanted to create that kind of like...
Leitmotif.
Yes, like it had to be over the top. Kind of acting a little bit, not making it cheesy, but you know, but not like, this is not a serious comedy. They have to be a little bit, which of course backfired in some places, because unfortunately in the day and age we live in, some people, when we did some test screening, they'd be like, I don't get it.
People thought we were being offensive.
Yeah, were we being
offensive? The movie played a lot better in Europe than America, where they're a little bit less PC.
So interesting.
Jewish film festivals here?
Jewish film festivals didn't take us.
They didn't like the movie. Not all of them.
In Europe, they took us. They took us in Europe.
Yeah, Europe, I mean, the British Jewish film festival loved the movie. But here, I got an interesting, because I know some people personally, they're like, even, I'm not going to mention the festival here in California, I know the people, and they took another movie of mine, which is also a comedy, not a feature that I produced, but they were like, yeah, we're not sure, people might find that, and I'm like...
That we're making fun of.
In other words, they didn't like the fact that these two Israeli, although Judean... men were debating whether or not they would kill someone.
It's more like you know, when you watch a screening, and we did, there's one particular line, for instance, I think is hilarious, but basically my character in the film is the passed out crusader that these two Jewish guys come across during the Third Crusade, and eventually they decide to give him water, and one of them gives my character water, and he kind of spits out and he goes, wine. Right. And of course, they don't speak English. So they turn to each other and one of them goes, what did he say? And the other one goes, oh, he said you're a dirty Jewish heathen who deserves to die. And then the other one looks at him for a second and goes, all that in such a small word?
Which is hilarious.
Which I think is hilarious.
It's hilarious.
It's difficult with the comedies.
It's comedy.
It's comedy. It's comedy. And then, of course, the other one immediately goes, no, I have no idea what he said. What do you think? I don't speak his language. But, you know...
But they were offended by that.
Look, I've been in screenings, and it's usually Americans. You see people just go... they tighten up, and you're like, what did he just
Especially
say?
Especially non-Jewish Americans. Yeah, yeah. That's the funny thing. Look, the comedies are tough these days. I honestly feel very bad for comedians. You know, I actually think that... You know, especially since Trump is not president anymore, I really feel bad for them because before at least they could make fun of him. Now I have no idea. Like everything is, and this movie, whole idea was to make not fun of people, but it's supposed to be over the top funny. This is actually exactly the goal is to show the stupidity of certain things and to teach people. And some, you know, like UK, European, they loved
the end,
it.
Of like getting past these strange
Israelis, of course, like it.
Things.
It's very positive. Yeah. I mean, because the crusader very well may have wanted to kill them if he found them passed out. Like,
right.
Like, it's a message about humanity.
Yeah.
And it's positive. And it is annoying that you dealt with that. It annoys me that you dealt with that because, you know, African-American community, they're allowed to have characters say things to each other that other people shouldn't say. And your two Jewish characters should be able to joke about, and I can say this because I'm Jewish, I can joke with a Jewish friend that I can go, dirty Jew. Like, I can do it. We're allowed.
And in Israel, it's very prevalent. So I kind of wanted my characters to talk modern, even though it's anachronistic on the time, you know, and debate like two modern Jewish guys debate, you know. And again, we're Jewish, Israeli. We kind of have that familiarity with that stuff. And just overanalyze and overtalk and just like... There's this joke, you know, two Jews, seven opinions, you know, and it's that kind of idea. They just can't make a decision, and that's the movie. It's a perpetual indecision of like, do we do this? Do we do that? Why don't you do this? Okay, let's do it, but you do it. No, why do I have to do it? You do it. No, okay, but you said you were going to, you know, it just keeps on going and going and going.
Well, people don't have a gray area in the United States anymore. That's the problem, and that's why we got that kind of feedback from people, even though people, you know, like the film, but I think festivals were afraid.
More cautious.
For me, this is a movie about, you know, for starters, you have a crusader who doesn't speak their language and who is there essentially to conquer their land, and they are supposed to be afraid of him. Instead, they end up finding him, you know, a common language and even giving him food, and not only not killing him, but actually helping him.
And he helps them.
So, that's what I think the message is that no matter what your background, no matter who you are, no matter how you look, no matter what kind of whatever, you can find the middle ground and gray area maybe and still remain, keep your faith. Meaning they didn't become Christians. He didn't become Jewish. He still believes that he's here to conquer and do whatever. They still believe that they have to hide and take their, you know, the Torah scrolls, by the way, we never talk about it, but in the...
They're in the car.
Yes, exactly. So I think it's a movie that teaches you something, but make it in a funny way. But unfortunately, a lot of times here in US, we got that kind of like, I don't understand why it's funny. But we did really good in Europe and European festivals.
And, you know, people like it in America.
Jewish festivals here as well. Jewish festivals were sensitive.
Strangely,
But I not know their history well enough to know that it was the Ottoman Empire at the time anyway? And
I think I had a story very similar to it with another movie I produced, a small documentary, which did very well and actually was used here by some like an organization, like a prison system, for example, about tolerance, about the Jewish skinhead. Very small documentary I got involved with because I really wanted to help a friend of mine who had this idea. And we got the same exact feedback from the Jewish festivals. They didn't want, aside from one in the US, they were like, no. But I'm like, but this is a story about, it actually shows you something. No. So I had very similar approach here, although it's a comedy. So I could even understand it there. Okay, you have a Jewish guy who becomes a skinhead, gets almost killed, goes to whatever. But here it's a comedy, and still we got, you know, so I guess
A lot of Jewish film festivals tend to be a little bit more traditional in that they want, if it's about Jews, they want it to be like the Hasidic community in New York, and oh, he's leaving the community, or oh, they're getting married, or oh, this is a butcher, and he's where, or it's political or whatever. And it's funny because one particular very big festival, Jewish festival in the UK, that loved our film and everything. We even got feedback from the guy when we submitted. He's like, oh my God, this is amazing, hilarious. I wish more films like this were being made. So funny. And I couldn't help but chuckle because this particular film festival years ago, I submitted the script to for funding and they turned me down and they made their typical kind of Hasidic whatever thing. And that year they also made a typical Hasidic whatever film that a friend of mine was in.
Every year they fund a short or...
Yeah, they kind of give funding out. So it's quite funny. You know, Jan and I also even discussed this in pre-production about the film that like, is this really the movie that we're going to make? We like the concept, we like the script, but what if we make it like in Afghanistan and modern, and it's a U.S. soldier who two like Afghanis come across with a cart? It's the exact same premise. And how would that play? You know, it's the exact same premise, but you make that movie and how's that going to be received compared to something like this?
That's so funny because I'll just share this morning. I knew I was going to talk to you two and I think I was in the restroom that might be a few inches from my left hand right now. And I was thinking about it like your film actually could have been, you know, two Jews finding a guy in Klan robes.
Mm-hmm.
Or two black people finding someone passed out in Klan robes and helping and deciding to help him after debating whether or not they would finish him. Like, it's completely modern and completely,
Yeah, but you know, it could be exactly. It could happen anywhere. It could happen
anywhere, anytime.
You know, yeah, anytime. It could. And it does teach you a lesson. But,
I think so.
You know, but people that liked it, they really liked it. Yeah. We got a lot of good feedback. We won some awards. We were at some really good festivals, but we noticed that,
including yours. Thank you.
Yes, including yours. But we noticed that UK and Europe really fought. The feedback of the movie was much stronger than here. Not that we apply to every single festival ever, but you know.
No, you can't. But but and which is interesting to me, just knowing that. I'm under the impression that in Europe and the UK, sometimes there's still some. Well, we're told as American Jews, I don't know if this is true or not, that there's still more anti-Semitism over there than here.
I mean, it's growing around the world, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But I think maybe one thing that also helped that we haven't mentioned yet, I mean, we kind of mentioned it around it, is that the film is in Hebrew, and it's so subtitled, and Americans aren't as familiar with watching subtitles, and especially comedy subtitled is a tricky thing. True. You know, we often hear about subtitled movies that are gaining acclaim and they're dramas or serious or whatever, but we don't really hear about as many comedies that are subtitled.
Humor is hard to
because humor is harder
I think you're
to translate.
Right. I think you're right. In fact, I think even our award jury probably, I think the subtitles, it's tough. It is tough.
We can
even though you throw in English.
Yeah.
For us.
but the English, like that whole bit, why it was so fun to listen to it in Israel is because there's wordplay jokes there, you know.
You know, I wanted to compliment you or tell, I mean, the Meta Bear.
Meta Bear.
That sticks in my head still.
Oh, thank you.
Just the way you say it and the way it carries.
Meta Bear, Meta Bear.
Yeah.
We consider doing it in English and French.
Yeah.
We talked about it for a second. Mm-hmm. Maybe the knight could be French. Because
technically
yeah.
there were a lot of French crusaders. Yeah.
But then we were like, you know what? We're shooting in Israel. Hebrew is funny.
We wanted to make an Israeli
Let's just
movie.
Make it in Hebrew. We contemplated that because of the humor and because of that for a second. And then, of course, if we did French, we're like, then you'll have to learn French a little bit.
Je parle un peu.
Yeah, he can do it. But the point is, we can sit that for 5 minutes, and then we're like, no, let's do it.
Yeah. But the feature's in English.
Yes, yes. But it will be
oh, you adapted. You
yes,
we
adapted.
Have written the Boy, feature.
A quick question. Why did you choose? Did you get to choose? Obviously, you got to choose what character you played.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't want to be one of the two main comedians. You wanted to be the guy who's passed out.
A couple things there. First of all, I'm 6'1". And that's quite tall for Jewish actors, generally speaking.
Especially at that time.
Especially at that time. I'm also ginger, so, and quite pale. So, you know, in keeping with different things. But I'm...
So you thought it would have been jarring if you had been Achan or Ezra?
I'm producing the movie as well. I don't want to do as much of a role.
It's helpful to be unconscious.
Yeah, he was also taking care of the car.
I'm taking
which
care
was
of
really
a lot
important.
Of different things. Yeah. You know, I don't want the extra burden of that. Also, I've always wanted to play knights. You know, like growing up, it was knights in shining armor and everything. So there was that fun thing to it.
And there's a Monty Python vibe too.
Oh, for sure. I love Monty Python.
Yeah.
And also, you know, our actors. We you know, flew them out and took care of them.
Yeah, they're not from U.S., from Israel. I mean, they are from Israel originally, but one lives in London, the other lives here. And we didn't really do casting either. We kind of had them.
People
like
him.
We know them. He knows them even before. And we have all this weird connection with one of them. And
right,
I do.
So you'd seen them work together? And
no, they've never
chemistry?
Worked together.
No. So that chemistry...
We did readings ahead of time.
You created that chemistry. Yeah. Yeah.
And rehearsed.
Well, you know, the guy that plays Ezra, he's kind of like this in real life. I mean, really is, in a way, so it was very easy.
Yeah, because, that's one of the reasons I thought of him, because he has a very positive, kind of like, the world is beautiful kind of outlook.
He would
help
someone
who comes
across.
Yes. He would.
Sometimes help too much. Tommy was like, how about him? I'm like, you know what? This is, he doesn't have to act.
Even though he hadn't really done much comedy, so it was quite interesting.
Interesting. Well, great casting. I mean, you could tell he's very funny.
Yeah.
They're both, they play off each other wonderfully.
They do.
So
yeah.
Even if he doesn't do a lot of comedy, you saw in him that he would be great at this. Yeah.
No, he was good. He was good. Yeah. They both were good, but he really does have that kind of personality. It was very easy to just be yourself.
They both kind of embody the characters in some way. You know,
you follow the John Huston school of directing, which is 90% of it is casting.
For sure. Yeah.
True.
For sure.
And work for this movie.
Yeah.
And it was fun also, aside from the flood, but even that was fun. That was fun.
That was fun.
Fun story to talk about afterwards.
For sure. Well, especially because you got what you needed.
Exactly. Exactly.
It would have been really lousy to come back to LA and be like, well...
No, we would have had... If Giora didn't force me to do this to turn the camera, because that wasn't the plan, I don't know how he figured it out, we would have had to shoot an extra day for sure.
Yeah, something similar.
But because, you know, it would have been very hard because they were on another project, to put a crew like this together was very hard because we really had the top.
Yeah, I mean, I assume you had flights and all kinds of things.
Well, that was another thing. Yeah, one of them needed to leave because he had something here. I don't remember. I think it was your own. Yeah, but anyway, there was no way. We had to shoot it this day, so we did what we could and it worked.
And if you hear a gardener, it's because my gardener is always scheduled to be here on a Wednesday, so I'm allowed to do podcasts on Thursday. But he didn't show up yesterday, and now he's here unscheduled.
Oh, great.
He might have met the knight on the way or something.
Son of a gun. Although I've noticed these microphones actually often only pick up what's near them, because we have the gain pretty low. So
okay, fair enough.
The three of us are hearing a gardener right now in a really lousy way, but I think this will be okay. We'll check it.
It's fine.
So you get back here and great edit. Good. Are you two working together here in LA on the edit?
The edit.
We had a... So
I mean, how much do you want to talk about the edit?
So I have this friend. I always try to give friends an opportunity. And he's a really good friend. He's a distributor in Israel. He's American who lives there forever, who actually has an interesting story by himself. He used to do all these Canon pictures. You know, remember Canon?
Yeah.
Anyway, he's a really nice guy. He was like, you know what? I have a great editor for you in Israel. It's cheaper, but regardless, it's in Hebrew, so you know you don't have to see it. Give
him the assembly first, and then maybe.
Yes, so I'm like, okay, great. No, I mean the guy is very nice, and then of course you know we give him the movie, and then at some point my friend's wife tells me, he gave you this guy? Are you crazy? he barely knows how to make trailers. I mean, he does that for us, and I'm like. Okay, but, I mean, for his defense, he assembled things together. It was not really a movie, but he put it together. And then I was like, okay, this is not going to work. Omri and I were like, okay, this is just, okay, it's an assembly, not an assembly. Nothing makes sense. So then it was a good start, but I was hoping he's going to finish the whole movie. So then we brought it here. And then, since, you know, again, budget this, that, we
pulled our hair out for 3 days.
Yes, and then
working
I...
Working on an edit with an editor friend of ours.
And who is a friend and actually a very successful editor who is now doing major stuff. I've known him forever. And he's like, okay, I'll sit with you, two crazy people, because I think he regretted it afterwards. Especially with this part, which we were telling you, there was this piece, which
with the cart,
moving with the cart, which was not only complicated because it was shot completely different location, but meaning the different, we were on the top, so we couldn't really move too much, but also because there was a mistake with the sword, so it was a lot of thinking of how to edit it so people cannot see what happens, meaning they cannot see the mistakes. So it took us a while.
We didn't have as much coverage as we would have liked, basically, is the technical way to put it.
Well, I mean, you already named that you had 30 setups.
Yeah.
But it worked, and Rafa, who is the editor, he really put a lot of time into it, but sat with us and probably cursed. I was like, oh my God.
And actually, your brother came up with a magical
solution.
Oh,
yes, I forgot about that. Yes, true. My brother.
So you showed it to some people and got some suggestions
here and there? Yes, you're right. My brother actually did come up with a solution. I forgot about that.
Yes.
Good thinking.
We flipped a shot secretly.
Oh, yes.
Which
helped
solve a big problem.
All the things you can do now. Digitally,
So it helped. So it saved us. So yes, so that's how it was done. And then we, you know, and then again, I guess it helps when you produce. I got the color and all the
The color.
Yes, cool. The color and what did we do? Did they do sound too?
No, the sound was your guy in Russia did the sound,
but he didn't mix. So anyway, so the color, I have a relationship with some of the bigger companies and, you know, Big Deluxe, which is company 3 in London. I was working with them on our project, so I told them, guys, my friend, who is a post supervisor, was working, who I've known forever before he even was a post supervisor. This is why it's very important, whoever listening, it's very important to be nice to people when they start out, especially assistants, especially people, because you never know. Then he became very good, very big. He did some major films with major directors. And, of course, he has a relationship. So he's like, you know what? Let me talk to the head of the company. Maybe that can just do it for you. And they were like, yeah, no problem. So they basically comped the entire online post. They did color, and they did the delivery for me and everything, which is why the movie looks very good, of course. And then the sound was done by a friend in Russia. But the mix, I have no idea what we did. Ah, you're right, yes. So we basically took a little bit here, a little bit there. There's a really good musician, sound person here in LA. Then he helped us. So we basically, the mix was done in a few different places because, you know, but yeah, we had a lot of help. I mean, the most important thing was to shoot it.
Yeah.
And then a lot of people helped us. The composer also, who is really talented, he's Italian, he's also a close friend. He did the music. Essentially for nothing, complained all the time, but and then the Omri even sings a song in there.
I do a little vocal in the score.
Yes,
and I was going to say when you were telling me earlier about how all this came together and all this. I think all this friendships, all the friendships involved in this is why, not the only reason why, but it's part of the feeling of the film that so many friends came together even in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just, it's part of the heart of the film. I mean, the film has a really good heart.
Oh, thank you.
And I think everything you're telling me, it just kind of, it all falls together in place as of someone who's just watched the film and just enjoyed it. That, yeah, of course, this was, you know, friend, you know, longtime friends who decided to finally work together. Friends brought in actors who you'd known as friends. Like it just has a really warm feeling as a film.
We also had a very good group of people. You know, we had kind of a pretty international crew in a way because, you know, Giora, who is Israeli, but he's also German. We had, you know, the costumes were done by a girl who is Muslim, who is an Israeli Arab, who is great, and she also did the production design kind of with Omri together, who is also really talented, and she's working a lot. We had even people coming from, you know, very far east of Russia that wanted to help us, two girls that were doing a lot of, one of them I know from LA, but they were really helpful because we needed somebody to kind of assist and help. And one of them, she was kind of almost in producer capacity in a way. And they actually flew specifically to help us for like 9 hours because they're from like Asian part of Russia, you know, which of course, yeah, which was interesting because, and they enjoyed it and, you know, talked
about it. And it had nothing to do with the fact that you grew up?
No, nothing to do with that. I actually know one of them from
LA. Quite a coincidence to end up working with them.
Yeah. So we had a lot of help from all kinds of people, and the Italian composer who is here in LA, but nevertheless he's
Spanish editor.
The Spanish editor, exactly, who is nothing to do with that. He'd never heard Hebrew before he heard that. So
Baha'i sound mixer.
Yeah, I forgot about that too. Yes, we had, he's actually Persian, but he's, yeah. So we had Persian, a really Baha'i, good international crew. People were helping a lot from all over, and the movie was based together between Israel, UK, US, Russia. I mean, we got people to help us everywhere. So that's another reason why I think the story is exactly about that.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, I think people just don't maybe see it. So we're taking another chance and we decided to develop it into a full feature using those characters.
Different tone.
Same character.
Same character concept, but we've shifted the tone slightly and done it in English. Yeah, but, you know, looking at the short film, it's something that you don't always feel that way. And obviously there are things that you can nitpick at, but I'm very proud of it. You know, when I see it, I'm very proud of it, and I'm happy to watch it, you know, and it's a film that I feel good about. So it doesn't always happen on stuff you do, but I feel that way very much about this film.
And it's a bit different because you didn't have an idea for a feature and then say, well, let's test a short first. You made a short because you had a short script
mm-hmm.
that was good. And then you looked at the film when you were done and said, okay, this is worth expanding. Was it the quality of the characters?
Jan was telling me from the beginning when he read it, he's like, oh, you should do a feature. You should write a feature. This would be fun as a feature. And I was trying to think about how it could work and, you know, and structurally how you would make it work. Because obviously you have to expand it and change it and that kind of stuff. And then based on the feedback that we got from the short and how it was received, I took that and the lessons, like Hebrew, comedy, maybe do it in English, more international, for instance, you know, the type of comedy that was working versus wasn't working and different ideas, and just worked off of that and made something, I like to say, a little more Mel Brooks, a little less Monty Python, even though I love Monty Python. But it's both.
But Monty Python is a little more niche, I think. Niche?
In America.
In America, yeah. Yeah, I know. They're huge, as they should be.
Yeah.
But yeah. So a little more, not American, but just more, well, it's obviously a smart choice to go English.
Yeah. Put a couple more slapstick type jokes
in there. Is what we see in the short in the feature at all, or is that just...
We would have to reshoot completely. That scene would exist, but in a completely different iteration of it.
The scene is in the script.
Yeah, yeah. But in a different iteration.
Yeah. And obviously it becomes a much bigger world. And
yes.
Takes place. But it is the story of these two characters.
Yeah, going in a journey.
Which I'm so
still
happy
about
Achan
and Ezra. Now they're traveling to Jerusalem rather than away from Jerusalem. and Salah Adin is in it, and it's fun. There's all sorts of historical cameos. And
Still the Knight. Fun things, but yeah. He only shows up once in a while, basically. He yeah. will be popping up.
He's recurring, that's wonderful.
Yes, he's recurring because...
There's a musical number.
He keeps looking for Jerusalem, basically. That's his thing. But it's funny. People like the script. We got really good feedback. So now we're trying to figure out what would be the next step and how to get
really great female characters in there. That was really important to do, especially in the time period when it wouldn't necessarily be as prevalent to find a way to integrate it into the story. Mm-hmm. So,
and I think the script is, it's funny. It has every possible character you can think about in it. Probably managed to offend everybody in it, but
everyone and no one.
Yes, it's
it works for the South Park guys.
Our is lighter than South Park, but yes, I mean the humor is similar to what.
Well, I'm so glad you're doing it because I have had conversations with people about how much we miss that style of film, miss the buddy comedy, miss the road film, because you don't really see it much these days.
Well, Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle, for me, it's essentially... The reason I thought about Achan and Ezra being a feature when I first read the short, I said, it's the same thing in a way, but takes place a long time ago. So you can be a little bit more... You can make it even funnier because, you can do things that you cannot do today. And that's, for me, was in my head. That's why I said maybe there's a feature in there.
I mean, the two-sentence pitch is Monty Python meets Mel Brooks, Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle, except it's Achan and Ezra Go to Jerusalem.
Yeah, and kind by the way, we had some problems with the name too because we were worried that nobody would be able
pronounce
to say Achan, or which we were right. So we tried all kinds of ideas for the name. Me and him, we were like going insane.
Where's the donkey? Right,
you're going to change. You're going to change Achan's name for the feature.
No, name of the movie.
Name
itself.
Of the short. We tried we tried changing it to Donkey.
Or Where's the Donkey was really the closest we came.
All
to.
Kinds of stuff, and then he said.
Night in the Desert. Sorry, what?
Once Upon a Time in the Holy Land?
Yeah, I think something of Jerusalem.
Funny thing happened on the way to Jerusalem.
Eventually he said, you know what? Let's keep it this way. And I said, why? He said, well, think about it. It was actually brilliant. He was right. He said, think about it. Called Achan and Ezra. Achan starts with A. So any film festival, our movie will show up first. It's exactly what happened. Every time you go to a website of festival, especially during pandemic, you see it. And like, okay, well, they can pronounce it. That is good. Let them, it works.
And it's funny. It creates a thing of like, how do you pronounce it? It's a...
By the way, there was supposed to be a donkey in it, as you know. I wanted to bring a donkey to the set. He was like, no way, it's going to cost extra money. I was like, yeah, but it would be fun. So we didn't do it. And then, of course, we, as you already know, we have a lot of friends. I called a friend, Felix, who is an amazing designer and also does title sequences. And I told him, Felix, maybe we do an animation introduction, but like not really animation, but more like really cool opening sequence where we can have a donkey and, people can be like, okay, and then we can show how donkey runs away. He said, no problem. Don't worry about this. I got it.
7 months later, we still didn't have an animation and we didn't have a poster which he was supposed to design.
But then 8 months later, he's like, okay, here it is. And he gives us 3 minute long animated movie about how donkey runs away.
It wasn't 3 minutes long.
Okay, it was long. The point is, it was almost like the short by itself. And he's like, here. And I'm like, yeah, but it doesn't have most of the stuff we told you. So it doesn't matter, it's better. And so we contemplated about putting it in the movie, and then we were, okay, you cannot have a 2 minutes, whatever, long sequence with its own story in it. So we took it out eventually, but the idea was
that makes me think of the Blake Edwards Peterson, like the Pink Panther kind of thing, where you always had a nice little animation intro.
Yes. But unfortunately, he didn't follow the
did not listen to his director.
Yeah, something like that.
So what happens when you work with friends? They do their own thing.
But he has a really nice introduction to put in his portfolio.
And he's fantastic. He really is very talented.
He did an amazing job.
It can live on its own. It just doesn't go well with the short.
He does tell the story about the donkey, but in a very weird way. And it's like, would have confused people, So, but it still exists somewhere online, I guess.
And honestly, the film, the way the film starts, you didn't need it anyway. Because I'm thinking about, you really feel their tiredness and their exhaustion. And, That would have been a distraction, really.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted the donkey because there was two reasons. First of all, I like donkeys. Second of all, when I was in high school, we were on this field trip, and we had to, and we got, they taught us how to ride a donkey, and they gave us a certificate. So I officially have a donkey driver license. So it's like, no, it's really a true story. This is great. I can finally, you know, have a donkey and maybe can ride him. But Omri didn't agree.
These are his priorities as a director.
He was like, no way we're getting a
but
donkey.
But is that a Soviet Union donkey driver's license?
No, no, Israel.
Israel. High school in Israel. Okay, so no, you were in Israel, Israeli, so your donkey license was good.
Yeah, it was good.
It was actually fun because, you know, I mean, it was funny. I remember it was like 15 or something, and they were like, please make sure you wear long pants. I'm like, no, it's too hot. And then guess what happens? The donkey's short, so when you go and he goes through the terrain, so yeah, your legs basically destroyed for next month. So I learned.
Oh, just scratched up.
And donkeys, they like to eat of the things, and they
right. So he kept dragging you into the brush,
but they still gave me a certificate.
Thorns and thistles all over your legs.
That's exactly what happened. And the instructor was like, "You know, I told you, everybody. I told you guys. Nobody listens." So,
well, yeah, it's hot in the desert. You can't tell kids what to wear.
So in case people wonder, yes, people do ride donkeys in Israel, and you can even get a driver license.
If you were wondering about the donkey, Israeli donkey license.
Yes.
I've never seen anyone riding a donkey in Israel.
I did.
Just going to say, a little bit younger.
It's because you come from a, you know, posh background.
Are you kidding? I come from farmland in Israel.
Well, you know, either that or they just do it with the Russians who come to Israel. They're like, okay, we don't have cars. Here's a donkey. That could be also a possibility.
Well, your dad was a diplomat, so, but still, sounds a little posh.
We weren't in a posh area, no. We were in farmland. I grew up next to orange groves and dirt roads. That's where we were.
Listen, I basically, I you know, as I said, I'm born in Russia, so I had to exchange a bear to a donkey. I like donkeys.
Wonderful. Well, have there been other projects since this? And by the way, we did hint at the whole COVID thing that you shot it right before and then you finished and then your festival run was trapped by the pandemic.
I mean, we still had fun, but unfortunately, you know, you're like, okay, you had a movie in the festival, great. But then, you know, you don't actually enjoy the whole, you know, ability to go through and meet with people. But, you know.
Which was one of the things that was great about your festivals. We had those little windows and some mingling and stuff. It was nice.
Oh, yeah, we had a mixer, right? Yeah. The outdoor mixer?
Mm-hmm. I was in Europe during that time.
You were able to come and came. Yeah, that was for everyone listening. In November of 2020, so about 8 months into the pandemic, we had this festival and it was virtual, but I was dying to meet people. I knew it was safe to meet outdoors, although we actually wore our masks, I believe, but we had an outdoor festival mixer for all the filmmakers to meet each other and a couple of the board members, and people came from as far as Portland and Austin, Texas, because it was the first time in almost a year that they could attend to something.
Yeah.
So I was amazed by that. That was really nice. That was a nice break from it all.
Yeah, yeah. It was really nice to speak to other filmmakers and made a difference for sure.
It did. It did. And hopefully, I don't know. Sometimes I always hear after the fact of people who met and like traded emails and
no, it's important, the social part, like people go to festivals, you can, and even small festivals, you can meet people and you can, and then it, you know, that's one thing that unfortunately we couldn't do with the movie. But, you know, a lot of, I mean, for me personally, for example, I owe some festivals my certain films, because if I didn't go, I didn't meet, it would never happen. So I actually believe in that part. It's worth the money you spend to travel or whatever, because you, if you're good with people, you actually can meet people and it could contribute to a project, even when you're starting out.
Absolutely. Actually, as a festival programmer, I do have destination envy, those festivals that I know take place in like a small town or up on top of a mountain, that kind of, or on a Hawaiian island. I wouldn't have minded that either. Yeah.
There's one in Bali.
Yeah. But like when there's a destination, everyone's together for, you know, couple days or a week, like that's a really special experience.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't happen in the heart of LA.
No, not as much. No,
although we do all right with our festivals, right? Because we have a mixer at the beginning of the festival, and then 5 to 7 days of films, and then a mixer at the end, and it's nice.
People still come.
But it's still not, you know, getting up in the same. I've been in one of those where, you know, everyone's staying in the same hotel.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice. Seeing everyone at breakfast and going, oh, boy, see that bad movie yesterday? No, I'm kidding. It's always, they're always good.
Yeah.
It's fun.
It is fun. But, yeah, we have, obviously, we spoke about our feature version of this that we're doing. Jan just shot a movie in Spain, produced it.
Yes, about Dali. It's not quite about Dali. Well, Dali is part of it.
The title.
It's a unique story. It's a really good project. Started as an American. I mean, American. It's always been European. We were going to do it as an English-speaking film, and then we decided when COVID started, everything fell apart. I'll get too much into details. There are some interesting details. We basically decided, you know what, let's make it as a European film, because these days it doesn't really matter, and the movie is European subject. So we put an amazing European cast, and that was shot in this fall, and now we almost done with, I'm about to lock the cut, and it's going to go to one of the big festivals we know, because it's a really good movie already, but I don't, you know, I don't want to say anything yet, but I already kind of know what's going to happen. So that was fun, to spend some time in Dalí city, town in Spain. He managed to make a feature during pandemic.
Yeah, I went to Ukraine actually, and shot a film
like in the middle of pandemic.
Right in the middle. Yeah. It was a bit nerve wracking, but it was a great experience.
You got cast in it, and
I'm the lead of the movie.
It's a collaborative process.
It's like an American detective travels to Ukraine to investigate this disappearance of a former professor that he worked with, and he uncovers this plot by a cult. So it's kind of Da Vinci Code meets Third Man with a little bit of Seven mixed in there. I was
more a consulting producer on it, like an AP, but he, you know, helped with the script a little bit.
I helped develop the script a bit. Yeah. And
develop, but he write the bad script. That's what he helped
with. In other words, you made it worth shooting.
Yeah, I did what I could, you know.
You're humble, but Jan's telling.
Listen, compared to what, I mean, the movie came out decent considering all the circumstances, pandemic, you know, original script, which was messy, you know, and a lot of other problems that I don't want to get. There's a whole separate podcast we can do about that specific movie. But he was there. I didn't go because I didn't want to go during the pandemic. He was there. He had decent experience. It was, you know, he was taken care of pretty well. The movie is decent. It's coming out in theaters now in Ukraine, assuming theaters are still there when it comes out. Sorry for the bad joke, but I have a dark sense of humor. But it is coming out. Yeah. And then
my family's Ukrainian, so it's not that we have a single person left there, but my goodness.
Yeah.
But the movie...
Every day.
Well, there's also media.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
You know.
Thank you.
So, but the movie is coming out, and then we are, you know, hopefully going to get some kind of platform release here. You know, our mutual friend is helping with that. So
excellent. So we'll see. And I realized there's one question I didn't ask that I probably should of Jan, which is, all right, so I've heard your life story, a very brief version. So this was how did it feel to direct this film? Was it what you'd been?
I mean, it's between Omri and I, it was almost like a teamwork because, you know, there were two of us that had to do half to produce and fix things and, you know, and of course, you know, Omri wrote the script, so he already built his own knight character. It was very hard to say anything about it because it was like, it worked. So, you know, but yes, it was fun. It was too short in my opinion. I would like to do it, you know, more, but that's why the feature thing is happening. But yes, I should have done it earlier. And thanks to Omri for pushing me because, as I said, I would procrastinate it another 5 years. But it was also, I always thought, you know, but if I do a short, what would it be? Because I want the comedy, but I wasn't sure. I read a lot of scripts. Some point I even went to you know, one of those websites has scripts and read a bunch of shorts and I didn't like anything and I don't really write. I mean, I can, but I had a script I wrote in film school, which I thought maybe that could be something, but then it was like, okay, but this is too dark, too this, too that. And then this idea came up and I really enjoyed the process. But of course, you know, when I do the next movie, whatever it will be, Achal Nezra, or there's a few other things I'm developing to direct, I'd like to have a producer Because, yes, of course, you can take a credit. But honestly, when you don't have somebody taking care of that and you have to do it, it's very hard to focus on directing as well and on everything else. So I really would like to have somebody to actually make it so I can focus on that. And Omri and I can focus on the creative part because we work well as a team. But I don't really want to produce and hear that's what happened. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. But, of course, I had to think about a bunch of other elements in the process, which...
Right. Well, because it was a small team.
And, yeah, of course. And everyone was, ends up. The experience were great, but as I said, I should have done it earlier because maybe, you know... But now, hopefully, with the feature, it will be a little bit different because we'll have somebody to actually help with the organizing part a little more.
Yeah. And we have a couple things going, so
yeah,
we'll see.
Excellent. That's great to hear. Well, I guess we're just over an hour, as predicted. So... because we talked about how long we'd go and said, yeah. No, normally we're in an hour, it peters out. So do you guys want to share social media or websites or anything?
Well, I'm not really a social media person, although I should listen to people, including my mother, who keeps saying, you should promote yourself, put yourself out there. And then she sticks my pictures on her Facebook page. And I'm like, oh my God, please help me, God. But anyway,
yeah, but I don't know why she keeps on saying you should go on OnlyFans. It's a bit strange.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, that's that actually, you know what? Today, considering for 2 years of not much happening, I was considering that, you know, because, you know, the independent producer is a tough... people don't realize, and even creative people that don't know producing, they're like, yeah, you guys taking all the money, you're this, you're that. But the reality is it's actually opposite. We're taking nothing, you know. I always, there's a joke, a Russian joke, which is, means it's not funny, but I remodeled it to like a film industry, you know, and basically it goes like this, you know, you have a Hannibal, walking with a big bag and something is, you know, Hannibal is the guy that eats cannibal? Yeah, cannibal. So he has a bag, like a Santa Claus type of a bag behind his back. And he's walking with it and something is clearly alive there. And he runs into another cannibal. And the cannibal says to him, what do you have there? He's like, nothing. He's like, no, I can see something is alive there. What do you have there? He's like, well, you know, I wasn't at this film festival and I caught this independent producer. And the guy goes, no, get rid of him. He's like, why? He's like, I had one of those yesterday while he was boiling in the stew, he ate all my potatoes. So that's kind of, you know, for me, that's mostly what the indie industry is. You know, people, there's a lot of struggle. So when you actually manage to do something, I think any movie is a miracle. And making any film is a miracle, especially these days, especially an independent movie, because it just, there's so many elements to actually make it happen. And you need, and it's a teamwork. Like, I always tell people, if you think you're the genius director and you can make it happen, you can't. If you don't have a team, if you don't have people that support you, if you don't have a team that understand you, if you become a dictator, yes, you can want to become, you know, big name, you can do whatever. But until then, you know, you gotta kind of, if you want to help, you need to help, you know, you need to get your team to support you. So, you know, so that's...
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we're sitting on this podcast, because I have so much respect for people who get indie films made, because the landscape is so different now than even 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just the homes.
Social media. I have Instagram.
Oh, you have Instagram.
So occasionally, I don't really, you know, put myself in there, but occasionally I do put projects that we do. And, you know, who knows? Now I'm thinking about, because now I started directing, I get a little bit more involved into that. So I'm considering doing like a more of a, you know, something bigger, maybe starting TikTok, maybe telling jokes, Russian jokes. They're not funny, but I can get, you know, a lot of...
So you already heard a preview.
This was the funnier one. But anyway...
Your cannibal joke, I'm just going to share because we've got a writer and a producer. The joke about the producer and the writer are crawling through the desert. Their car broke down. They're crawling in the sand, dying of thirst. And then 20 feet away, they see a pool of water and they crawl up to it. And the writer starts putting his hand in it. And as he's lifting the water to his lips, he looks up and he sees the producer pissing in the water. And he goes, what are you doing? And the producer says, don't worry, I'm making it better.
That's funny.
It's, that was told to me by a screenwriter when I was a very young person. But that's my writer producer.
But I think
joke.
It changed a little bit now because you know I mean at least for me I never do I mean I work you know I know how to work with writers if I'm actually in producer capacity. You know.
Yeah, that's more the like you know the Hollywood thing where the guy is just. I'm being sexist, kidding. It's a guy, but yeah, the guy is just like, well, if I'm going to take a paycheck, I got to change something.
Well, actually, I believe that the studios have even more influence. You know, I was literally thinking the other day about some really well-known studio directors that are really good, and I'm thinking, okay, but they probably much, because if you look at certain studio films, you see a certain connection, you almost feel like, there's similarities, but they're like, the directors are good, and some of them directed independent movies before. And then, of course, today I accidentally stumbled upon an article which talks about Francis Ford Coppola saying exactly the same thing. Hey, by the way, I think those directors are much more talented, but they're being screwed by studio. And I'm like, I just thought about that. So so that may be that, but I think also studios are, you know, I think the independent cinema is evolving, TV is evolving. I think there's a lot more opportunities for young talent. I think there's a lot more opportunities for people in general. I think it's going to... You know, we're going to end up with studios being studios, and then everybody else is going to, there's going to be some kind of a direct, which already happening, filmmaker to consumer kind of thing where you could share your work with, and then you maybe don't need the stars. You're still going to go to a theater to see big Marvel movie, but I think that there's a lot more to it than, I think things are evolving and changing for good. I don't know how social media conversation went into that, but this is what it is. So I do have Instagram. So if anybody wants to connect, great. It's Yan, Yan, F7R.
Right.
So that's all my social
F7R
media.
F7R is your Fisher?
Yes, it's Fisher and 7R. Honestly, I like number 7, and I don't remember why I put R exactly, but it was a reason.
It's good, but it's nice and short, too.
Yes.
Nice and short.
So I, you know, so that's my social media at the moment, and yeah.
And no website you need us to share?
We had a website for a company, but I don't know, nobody's using it, so, you know,
Honestly, websites don't get updated anymore, and no one goes to websites anymore.
Yeah, exactly, so there's no point, and, you know, if I want to share something, you know, a lot of time there are special website we create, or distributor will share it, so, but I do use Instagram to meet people. Sometimes when you go to film festival, people can, like, hi, you know, and then or you, you know, a lot of old friends that you haven't seen for a while. But I don't, you know, I don't necessarily use it. I have a lot of just beautiful pictures because my background's photographer, so I like taking pictures, still pictures. So I still do it. You know, occasionally I talk about my projects there. But yeah.
So absolutely. And Omri?
I don't social media so much at all. Technically, I have an Instagram. I think the last time I posted something on it,
he doesn't follow anybody. He just
and I don't follow anyone on Instagram.
Excellent. So you have an Instagram account with zero followers and zero following.
No. People follow me.
People
but
follow you. But
I don't,
you don't
follow
anyone.
The point of it is like I have it because people keep on saying I need to have it, and I need to see like check out this thing so you can look at it on Instagram. If you don't have an Instagram account, you can't. I'm like the point of not following anyone is. Obviously, there are a couple people that maybe it would be good to follow that I would enjoy following. But I feel like the second I open up that can of worms, it's like then there's all that like, oh, I'm offended you're not following me. Like, I don't go on Instagram. I'm not on it. So I don't want anyone to get this preconceived notion that I'm following anyone. It's not a...
It's egalitarian what you're doing.
To a certain extent. You're treating everyone equally. Exactly. And again, I don't really post on it. It does exist. Maybe I'll...
Yes, you do.
At some point.
He reposts other people's stuff.
Oh, yeah. When I'm
that's
tagging things, I'll like
does.
Repost or whatever.
I'm like, I've already seen it in 5 different people.
Look, I do. All I do on my personal account is like pictures of like things growing in the garden.
Yeah.
No, there's a lot of pictures of my dog in there, actually. Yeah. I'm thinking about it, which people like a lot.
People love the dogs.
Yeah. It's like you put the dog, everyone's like, oh my God.
In fact, I've curated, you know, the stuff that they try to show you things that you've clicked on before. So I make a point of only tapping on dogs so that when they push things at me in their reels, I just see Siberian Huskies who talk.
Nice. Yeah, that's basically what nice. I get yeah. sometimes, because I use Instagram mostly lately to yeah. look at the...
I skip over the bikinis. I don't want them to think I want to look at bikinis. Show me a dog until I get to a dog. And then I'm like,
I want bikinis, but, you know, it gets me in trouble all the time, so I'm done with bikinis.
Very tricky. Very tricky world.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it goes back to what my mom asked me, you know?
Right, you're not in it to be famous. Fair enough.
The privacy, and you know, anyway, but I do have Instagram, omri.rose. That's my handle, I guess.
Very original.
Very original. It's my name with a dot in the middle. But I also have some podcasts that are out there if you want to check them out. I have Shadow of Truth, which is a true crime podcast. It was the number one true crime podcast for like 2 months when it came out. And I have Spies and Lies, which is a podcast that I created. It's an espionage podcast that I co-host with my father. We talk about all things espionage, and that's an exciting podcast.
So that sounds very cool. Now that I know you've lived around the world, and diplomat is now in quotes in my mind.
So
Spies and Lies and Shadow of Truth.
Yeah.
We're working on a podcast together now based on a very big story, which I can't really give too much information, but it's based on a article, and it's something to do with, you know, drug industry and Cali cartel.
Podcasting is a fun, I mean, besides the fact that we're on one, and I'm about to ask people to like and subscribe and give and 5 stars, but it's a cool medium. I really enjoy it as a listener that, you know, and then I seek out really boring ones that help me go to sleep.
Nice. Good.
What are you going to do? All right, well, we just said like and subscribe, but this is the Discover Indie Film Podcast, and Jan Fischer and Omri Rose just talked about their film Achan and Ezra, and you should watch it. You may not be able to see it right now, or can they see it online? Do you have it online?
You're going to be the first one where we're giving details to do it.
So the film is going to be in the Discover Indie Film TV series, and it's going to be in season 5, which I'm hoping releases on March 15th. I just have to wrap things up with a couple other films. But go to Amazon Prime Video on a nice, big, beautiful TV with the motion settings corrected and the color settings corrected. I'm getting a big thumbs up from Omri.
Take some little lessons if you want to.
Yes. And it makes me feel bad that, like, I don't remember anything. But so go to Prime Video, search for Discover Indie Film. And by the way, be a nice person and go to Amazon.com and give this TV series 5 stars. Why not? Doesn't hurt you to give it 5 stars.
It's free.
And by the way, Amazon's a little funny. Every season is separate. So like the stars that go to season 1 don't apply to season 5. Like season 5 will say like no reviews. So come on, everybody. Share a little love.
Share a love.
And, the comedy Achan and Ezra will be in Discover Indie Film. If you want to learn more, discoverindiefilm.com is the website. And the social media handle is @DIFWINS. DIF for Discover Indie Film, and WINS because first we had to change the name of the podcast, actually, and everyone voted for that one. DIF1, WINS. All right. And Achan and Ezra was in both film festivals that I'm going to mention now. It was in the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in November of 2020. We hold that festival every November. In fact, last November, when we got back in the theater, we went for 8 days.
Wow.
8 days.
Nice. It's like Hanukkah.
Like Hanukkah, right? And if you want to learn more about that festival, go to ShermanOaksFF.com, and it's @ShermanOaksFF on social media. And the June festival that also had their film, every June we have Film Invasion Los Angeles. If you want to learn about that, go to filminvasionla.com, and it's @filminvasionla on social media. And thank you both for coming over.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
And thank you, everyone, for listening.